right. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining the NAWH Green Voice virtual event today, this afternoon. If you are attending this virtual event, you are muted. So if you have any questions during the session or any of the three sessions, please type them into the chat section, and I will ask the speakers at the end of the sessions to answer those questions. I will read them for you. I also want to thank, of course, our sponsors, Global Lighting and JLF Lone Meadow are both sponsoring this event, and our other Green Voice events throughout the year, and we would not be able to do these without them. So thank you to both of them very much. Also, the NAWH Sustainable Hospitality Committee does a lot of work to put these on, so I want to thank everybody on the committee. And remind everybody, if you are seeking CEUs for this webinar or any of the three webinars today, there will be information at the end of the session. All of the information to receive those CEUs will be posted on the final slide during the question portion. So I would like to introduce Scott Vollmer. Scott, I knew I flubbed your name. Vollmer. Vollmer. It's such a mouthful. He is a mechanical and environmental engineer with GLUMAC. I love their tagline, Engineers for a Sustainable Future. That is so fabulous. Scott has 12 years of experience in engineering and specializes in hospitality, recreational, commercial, and mixed-use projects. He's also, interestingly, registered in Washington, Montana, Oregon, Arizona, and Alaska, which was most interesting to me. And Scott does a lot of really exciting things that, to me, are exciting, trying to figure out how to fit all of those mechanical pieces in the very little bit of space that the architects give him. So with that, I will hand over the session to you, Scott, and thank you for joining us.
All right. Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you very much to Nicole and Dina for the introduction and the opportunity to speak to everyone. Today's topic for our NAWH webinar is technology and sustainability and how they interface in the hospitality arena. As Dina indicated, my name is Scott Vollmer. I'm a mechanical engineer with GLUMAC, and we have 9 offices up and down the West Coast, including one in Shanghai, with about 280 employees at last count. Today, we are going to be discussing a few items. The agenda for our webinar is as follows. First thing, we'll talk a little bit about our company's design experience in various hotels, discuss the sustainable direction from guests based on a couple of articles that I researched, the rating systems that are available out there to do your research for eco-friendly hotels, what I would call the star differentiation. It talks a little bit about the MEP systems that are based on the star hotels 1 through 6. Some of the sustainable opportunities that I will share with you in the expectation that you will have a little bit better understanding. Some of the rating systems with regards to hotels. We'll talk a little bit about energy utilization intensity, EUI for short. And then the innovative technologies, low voltage side, that we're starting to see on a regular basis throughout most of the hotels we stay in, and, of course, a summary and wrap-up, with the goal being about 45 to 50 minutes for the presentation and then some minutes to allow everyone to ask some questions. Here at the company that I work for, we have quite a bit of experience. We've done over 36 different hotel designs, ranging in 3-star to 5-star hotels across the country. We've worked with various flags and boutique hotels, some of which are Starwood, Hilton, Hyatt, Marriott and Wyndham, and then little boutique hotels like the Alexis Hotel here in Seattle. Even though, as most of you know, all of these different flags have their own design standards when you're designing their hotels, either renovation or ground up. But two things that are in common on all of these design standards. Number one, increase customer satisfaction. It's important for the guest to enjoy their stay so that they can keep coming back and telling their friends to go to this hotel. And number two, utilize energy efficient systems. Now, there may not be a sustainable mission at all of these flags, but they certainly want to have efficient systems that are going to save energy and increase the customer satisfaction in their hotels. As all of you know, the decision by guests to pursue eco-friendly hotels has become more and more important as we continue our travels. One of the articles I found in a Sustainable Initiatives, Sleeping Tight in Eco Hotels in the Tometrics Global Business Traveler, 47% of the survey respondents state that it's important to stay in a green or green certified hotel during a business trip, and 7% of those travelers consider it to be extremely important. Also, in the NEWH magazine that I just received the other day, in the winter 2013 edition, stumbled upon a couple of items that were of particular interest to our conversation today. And the strong top and bottom line economic facts that show how much more effective and profitable and guest-centric that a hotel is, it's one that's incorporated a strong sustainability program. That's extremely important to the traveler. And as you know, with regards to the LEED certified buildings, whether they be certified up to gold or platinum, on average, you're seeing them consuming 26% less energy, 33% less carbon dioxide emissions, 30% less indoor water, and of course, on a subjective level, it improves the health, comfort, and productivity of our indoor environments, which are very important to the guests. Some of you have probably done some research online. There's an amazing amount of rating systems that are accessible through the internet now. These are only a few, but a couple of them are the International Tourism Partnership has a program called the Green Hotelier, and this is a UK-based research tool that allows you to research hotels that are considered eco-friendly based on their measurement tool. Green Star is actually a test pilot for Middle Eastern areas, in particular Egypt, and what they've done is they basically have stated it's a 3-star for good, 4-star for very good, and 5-star for excellent, and that's based on how much of an eco-friendly hotel they are. And, of course, most of you are familiar with LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. That's what we utilize here in the United States and gives us an opportunity and a scorecard with which to design our buildings. There's a blog online called the Eco Green Hotel. This is a place that you can read articles about eco-friendly hotels and also do a little bit more research on which hotels you might want to frequent. Another one I found that was quite interesting was one called Green Keys. So the way this system works, and this is a Canadian-based rating system, it looks at 5 main operational areas and 9 areas of sustainable practice. As you can see, the operational areas would fall into the LEED EB, Existing Building Operations and Maintenance Program. They talk about housekeeping and operations. And the sustainable practices that are involved in rating these hotels are energy-based and water-based, similar to what we use in our LEED direction. As an example of what you could find on this rating system, if I typed in a hotel, eco-friendly hotel in Seattle, Hotel Monaco would pop up. And then if I went to New York, the Grand Hyatt would come up as an eco-friendly hotel. So there's a great number of avenues with which you can pursue research in finding an eco-friendly hotel. I talked to you a little bit about the star differentiators. When you go into Orbitz or Yahoo or Expedia, you can look up hotels based on the number of stars. This is a spreadsheet that I created as a mechanical engineer just to help my clients understand what kind of systems they would typically see. So, for instance, on a one-star budget hotel, which would be a Quality Inn, and also even a two-star, which might be a La Quinta Inn. The HVAC systems that are traditionally used in this kind of hotel would be a packaged through-the-wall air conditioning system or heat pump. You would, and all thermostat controls are right there on the packaged through-the-wall unit. There's typically three restroom fixtures. There's a water closet or a toilet, a lav, and a shower or bathtub. The quantity of electric circuits vary based on the stars because it gives you access around the room to plug in all of your equipment. And the lighting controls are usually standard switching controls. The plumbing fixtures are traditionally residential grade, in this case like American Standard. When you jump up to a three-star hotel, you're moving into the Holiday Inn Express. Typically the same sort of restroom fixtures and circuits in the lower stars, but now you're starting to see a little bit upgrade potentially on the heating, ventilation, air conditioning system. Either PTAC again, packaged through the wall, or perhaps a water source heat pump that is utilizing a cooling, roof-mounted cooling tower for heat transfer and taking care of your room. I noticed a recent purchase here. I haven't been very good at updating this. This is just the dollars per room that a recent three-star hotel had been sold for in the Seattle market. I hope to keep that updated on a regular basis. Then when you get into four-star hotel, this is where you're talking a Westin or similar. Here's where you start moving into a different kind of mechanical system. You have fan coil units, either a two-pipe, and a two-pipe would have two chilled water pipes and potentially electric heat, or a four-pipe, which would be chilled water and heating water. And those are traditionally a vertical stacked unit located at the perimeter of the guest room with the air blowing over the glazing. And then you start potentially seeing more restroom fixtures. You might have a bathtub and a shower instead of a combo. You start having a few more electric circuits and electric receptacles to plug in all your appliances around, all your particular pieces of equipment around the room. And then you start seeing perhaps a little bit more upgraded lighting controls, and the plumbing fixtures start getting a little nicer. You move into the five-star luxury, which is a Fairmont or a Ritz-Carlton. This is when they start hiding that ugly mechanical equipment, where they go with more of a horizontal fan coil system mounted above the entryway or perhaps above the restroom. And then you start thinking about potentially seeing an additional restroom fixture. Maybe a bidet is something they start adding into these fixtures. They're nicer, they're upgraded. They still have the dimming. And then you start maybe adding a rain head, something a little bit nicer that you wouldn't have at home. The six-star ultra luxury, some of you might be rolling your eyes that there's no such thing. Well, this is more of an overseas allocation, and this is where the finishes are starting to have better upgrades, the architectural finishes. The mechanical systems and the restroom fixtures are pretty much, the numbers stay the same, but they're starting to add services like concierge and masseuses and butlers and things like that for a six-star. There's even a seven-star in Abu Dhabi that I did some research on. Next, we'll talk a little bit about energy utilization intensity, or EUI for short. The energy use intensity noted below is, for a baseline hotel, is about 87,000 BTUs per square foot per year. And what this EUI is based on is the total energy consumption, both electric, natural gas, or other, steam perhaps, divided by the overall square foot of the hotel property, divided and over the year. So it gives you a good comparison to compare hotel to hotel to identify which one has a better EUI, or energy utilization intensity. One of the things we do with regards to starting a project out is we set up an energy pie. And all of your MEP, mechanical, electrical, plumbing consultants, should provide this to you as a consultant. And what this does is it allows you to evaluate the biggest bang for your buck. In the case of this hotel, this baseline hotel, your space heating is the highest energy usage in the building, followed by domestic water heating and then cooling. So and of course lighting. So the investment of an energy efficiency measure would be to focus on those three or four big pieces of pie rather than focusing or creating energy efficiency measures for the smaller sections. You want to get the biggest bang for your buck when figuring out a way to increase energy efficiency. This would be a typical hotel load profile for that baseline hotel we talked about. In this case, it's the high-rise hotel. It's got a four-pipe fan coil system. In other words, chilled water and heating water. It's in Chicago on a typical summer day. And as most of you would be well aware of how this profile would look, you've got the early morning when everyone's getting up to start their day, and then at the end of the day with a dip during the middle of the day when they're out and about in meetings and visiting the area. So this is kind of giving you a rough idea of how that load changes throughout the day. Now we're moving into our sustainable opportunities, kind of the meat of our presentation today. First item, this was actually what we've been told was the first LEED NC certified hotel on the West Coast. It's the Hilton in Vancouver, Washington. And a lot of the opportunities that we incorporate into this hotel are actually mainstream right now. They're done everywhere, and they're actually part of our energy code here in Seattle. But what we did here is we had occupancy sensors for lighting, but also we tied those in with the HVAC systems. If there's no one in the room, let's turn off the associated fan coil unit or associated terminal unit delivering air to the space. Let's save energy that way. Demand-based ventilation. This is a method by which we evaluate carbon dioxide to determine how much outside air should be brought into the space. If a ballroom has a few people, let's just bring in the outside air that's required and thereby reducing energy, both cooling and heating, potentially to satisfy the ventilation load in that particular space. The electric charging stations, those have, of course, become mainstream, but back in 2006 when we finished this, this was something they incorporated for the electric cars and preferred parking. Operable windows. I truly want to have operable windows in every project I work on. Just have to be prepared. In this case, when the window is open, the HVAC fan coil unit is turned off. You want to make sure you incorporate that energy efficiency measure whenever possible. In the below-grade parking structure, we actually incorporated variable speed garage exhaust fans with carbon monoxide sensors. This allows you to speed the fans up as necessary when the cars are moving in and out of the parking space, and, of course, reduce the fan speed when the cars are not moving throughout the garage. And also extensive dimming systems based on the amount of daylighting and also for creature comfort. I'm going to bring up now some sustainable opportunities to share with you kind of a general overview of the different opportunities that are available, primarily to give you some oversight so that you're able to, of course, ask questions of your MEP consultant, but also to have them in your quiver of arrows that you might be able to suggest to the owner-operator on your next hotel project. So I've broken this down into the groups under lead, but haven't specifically provided them as lead credits per se, because I wanted to make it more of an overview to give you that definition. So the first one would be to eliminate light trespass. This could be internal light, moving out of your space and across the property line because the light's not shining in the appropriate space that's necessary. But primarily, it's also about exterior light. You really want to pay attention and use light with cutoff type fixtures that are providing the light to the area for security purposes, for ambiance purposes, and for just overall comfort of people walking through the space. And you want that light to stay on site. You do not want that light to trespass either across property lines or perhaps into other people's buildings. It's appropriate to use it where it's necessary. On the water efficiency side, all of you are well aware of the plumbing fixtures that are utilized throughout different project types in hotels. So you've got toilets and water closets, 1.28 gallons per flush. They work very well. They save a tremendous amount of water. We've always, as most of you know, with the dual flush, we've just had some challenges with those because of the fact that people don't really know which buttons to push, and they tend to push them over and over and over again, actually using more water than what should be required for that particular instance. Urinals, 1/8 gallons per flush, or 1 pint of water used per flush. And in this case, these work very well if designed together for the flush valve and the urinal itself. But don't try to renovate and remove a flush valve or replace it with a 1/8 gallons per flush valve and use the same urinal, because it just won't provide the scouring action that's required. Lavatories or lavs, the 0.5 GPM aerators work very well throughout public restrooms and also the private guest rooms. And then showers are a challenge because you've got 1.5 gallons per minute, you've got 1.75, you've got two code mandates, 2.5 here in Washington, or UPC actually. But the challenge is the perception from the actual guest tenant as to what kind of showers are required. Most of them have not allowed us to drop down to 1.5. They mostly reflect about using a 2 or even code minimum, because it's the guest experience that they're focused on. But the 1.5s are getting better because they're an aerating type, so it actually feels like you're getting more water than is actually being delivered. The recovery of water is a challenge. The best places we've been able to accommodate rainwater recovery here in our area would be to use double duty. We're required to have a fire water storage tank of about 33,000 gallons for high-rise buildings. So what we've been able to do is, since we're building the cistern anyway, we go ahead and separate that cistern. We have an area for the fire water, and then we have another area to capture rainwater. Then we can use that rainwater for irrigation. And potentially, though this would have to be validated with your authority having jurisdiction, we might be able to use that rainwater for makeup water for the cooling towers. But a lot of jurisdictions are requiring potable water for that. So rainwater recovery for irrigation has somewhat penciled out, but primarily you have to find a way to capture that cost for the cistern, and using it as a fire water storage, half of it has worked out for us. With regards to laundries, a lot of laundries are using ozonators, and what that enables you to do is use less chemical and therefore less water, which also reduces energy because you're not heating that water up for taking care of the laundry. And many of you, though this is not a sustainable practice, the hotels are moving their laundry facilities to off-site and allowing them to capture their space for other things. And then perhaps the people doing the laundry are able to do more and perhaps use more energy-efficient systems for their laundry facility. With pools, a lot of hotels have pools. There's a lot of new processes by which we can reduce the amount of chlorine. There will always be some chlorine required, but you can reduce the amount of chlorine and therefore the amount of chemicals and therefore the amount of backflush, which helps us to reduce the energy associated with heating that water and also flushing that water and replacing it with domestic potable water. Pool covers are mandated here in Seattle, but they've always been a challenge. As you can see from the picture below, it's challenging to cover an amoeba-shaped pool. So pool covers reduce the evaporation rate of these heated pools, which of course helps us save energy, and it's a great way to save energy. There's a couple new technologies that are coming out that probably some of you are aware. One are these octagonal, they look like little floaties, and what you do is you spread those out over the top of the pool. They can get themselves into little areas where the pool cover is challenging to accommodate. And then when the occupied hours, they actually use this vacuum that sucks up these little buoys and then stores them away to be used another time. There's also a chemical treatment that somebody's been experimenting with where it's a chemical that covers the top of the pool. It helps reduce the evaporation, and then when you're done, when it's open for business the next day, they go ahead and remove that chemical layer and save it to spread out the next night. On the energy and atmosphere grouping, the mechanical, electrical, plumbing engineer has a tremendous amount of opportunity here. In particular, daylight. You want to harvest as much daylight as possible into your exterior spaces or perhaps the ballroom that have access to a roof. Let's put skylights in. People like daylight. They feel good in the daylight, and people outside of the state of Seattle considering, well, today we have daylight, but you guys have a lot more vitamin D than we do, so we got to take full advantage of daylight whenever possible. The challenge, of course, is you need to reduce the glare. You need to have it useful daylight. So you need to think about incorporating the appropriate shading mechanisms to accommodate and reduce that glare so you're having a nice, even light throughout the entire space. The daylight also allows you to incorporate dimming throughout the space. If you don't need the light, turn it off or turn it down. That's a great way to save energy. And with photocells, either ceiling-mounted or wall-mounted, ceiling-mounted shown below, gives you the opportunity to dim those fixtures. What we recommend, and I think most lighting designers would recommend, is a continuous dimming system. Reduces the light level down to about 20%, so it doesn't give you the perception of a light turning off and on. It's very discomforting for people to, when the clouds cross or seeing light step switched in lieu of dimming. Dimming is a much better way to accommodate the energy efficiency measures associated with daylighting and the reduction of light. Some of the other items would be to talk about the creation of energy. This is always a challenge to make the system pay back. The picture on the right, of course, is a photovoltaic system. This allows you to capture sunlight, create electrical energy, and use it to satisfy some of the electrical loads within the space. Here in Seattle, we've not been able to have this pencil out, but in some areas like Denver and California, where your electric rates are higher than ours, and you have more days of sunlight, the opportunity and maybe the payback or the ROI on something, especially if there's a federal incentive or a local energy utility company incentive, that there would be a great opportunity here to make this pencil out. Another way is you want to recover as much energy as possible. You want to, in this case, it's an energy recovery ventilator. This allows you to capture the heat from the exhaust stream from your guest rooms, from your amenity spaces, electrical rooms, etc., and utilize that to run through a heat recovery module and preheat or perhaps pre-cool the outside air, the ventilation air that's utilized for the space. It's an amazing system, and it works quite well. In some cases, in some of your areas where you have high humidity levels, in this case, this is a sensible heat recovery core, you may want to incorporate sensible and latent to actually capture more energy than we might be able to with just a sensible heat recovery core. As I noted before, as a mechanical engineer, I really want to utilize natural ventilation wherever possible. It's very important. And as you can see from here, there's even opportunities to have natural ventilation when the windows are on one side. You notice there's a single-side ventilation that allows you to do two times the height. If you have a lower and upper window, you can actually have ventilation penetrate into the space about 2.5 times the height. And then, of course, the best would be to have some cross ventilation or have what you have called a solar chimney and use a stack effect. And you're able to draw air multiple layers, increase the overall buoyancy layer, and allow that air to vacate the top of the building after ventilating the space. It's an energy-efficient way. Of course, the challenges associated with natural ventilation are allergens and dust and pollen and security, and one person wants the window open and one person wants the window closed. And then how do you actually save energy with this? Well, from our perspective, there's two options. Of course, the best would be to have a mechanical operator. So when the window's open, the fan coil unit shuts down based on a relay. However, that's quite expensive. So what we've done here on a couple of projects is used it's a more of a manual system. It's a red light, green light approach, or perhaps just a green light. When the ambient conditions allow you to take advantage of the natural ventilation, the green light turns on. And this says to the occupants, open the window because the HVAC system is going to turn off. So that's been fairly successful, but it does require a paradigm shift from your occupants. Works well for office and things like that, and it gives you the opportunity to have connection to the outdoors. Here in Seattle, we've actually taken advantage of preheating our domestic water with solar. The payback would not be as good as places like Colorado or California or others, but it certainly is viable because of the huge domestic hot water load that is necessary in a hotel with the guest rooms, the laundry facilities, the restaurants, etc. In our case, we tend to design around what we call a drain back system. And what this does is this is a 140-degree temperature system. The solar collector is more of a flat cell, so it's easy to transport, easy to install. Operation is fairly easy, and it allows you to have a drain back reservoir and a storage tank, and then use that to preheat the domestic water for your facility. And the drain back system is in lieu of like an evacuated tube. That's a little higher temperature system, and the opportunity for damage on the evacuated tube cells, the solar collectors, has been fairly high. I'm hoping that's been corrected, but we tend to design around a drain back for most of our hotel projects. With regards to the engineered system, there's a lot of opportunities to innovate those. There's a lot of technologies available to help the owner-operator save energy while not negating the comfort of the occupants. One of these ideas would be a primary variable flow system. The traditional system for pumping chilled water or heating water is a primary-secondary system. You've got a primary pump running through some chillers. You have a secondary pump that's taking the load out to the fan coil units and air handling units. In the case of a primary variable flow system, as you can see on the right, there's only primary pumps that are providing the pumping energy to take the low chill water through the chillers and then subsequently out to the hotel loads. The challenge with this is requires a little bit higher technical maintenance capability, and also that modulating control valve must be fast acting. And nowadays, most of the controls manufacturers have created a system whereby this is an extremely efficient system and it works very well. And many of the maintenance mechanical contractors are aware of the system and know how to maintain it. Magnetic drive chillers. These are not new, but fairly new, and their prices are becoming more competitive. This is a system whereby the drives are actually levitated in a magnetic field, so no bearings. The system is very efficient, also extremely quiet. You could stand next to a magnetic drive chiller and have a very, very reasonable conversation, whereas the centrifugal chillers are quite loud in comparison. With regards to a heat recovery chiller, the efficiencies are a little lower on these than a standard water-cooled chiller. However, because of the high domestic hot water load within a hotel, the opportunity of creating the 140-degree water when you're using chilled water, which are very consistent, may give you the opportunity of incorporating not only a chiller plant, standard water-cooled, but also a heat recovery chiller to generate chilled water and also domestic hot water. The challenge, of course, would be to evaluate payback and ROI to ensure that the addition of a heat recovery chiller is appropriate for the owner-operator. From the standpoint of heating water, condensing boilers are something that we recommend. The traditional boiler is about 80% efficient, whereas a condensing boiler is about 96% to 98% efficient. And, of course, as most of you know, or some of you know, the temperature differential of the supply versus the return is where you're going to see those efficiencies. What they do is they have internal heat recovery that makes use of the energy and thereby decreasing the temperature of the flue gases and allows you to use a different type of flue material, CPVC, in lieu of your standard double wall flue that you see on the old boiler types. A mechanical system that has been very prevalent overseas in China and Japan is what we call a variable refrigerant flow, or a VRF system. This has become a lot more available in the United States, primarily because of representation and also because of contractors' understanding of installation. And what this allows you to do is utilize a system where you've got an outdoor condensing unit and then indoor fan coil units. So basically, you're getting rid of a cooling tower and a chiller and a boiler system. This is an air-cooled system. They do offer it water-cooled as well, but an air-cooled system, as I indicated, the condensing units and the indoor fan coil units, and those can be standard horizontal fan coil units for the 5-star hotel and above, or 4-star and above. It can be sidewall units if it was like a 2-star, or it could be cassettes that could be used to mount in the ceiling of particular rooms like offices and things like that. And its inherent ability to share heat back and forth based on the refrigerant system, as you can see in the diagram below, you're actually using a heat recovery module to share heat, so you can provide heating and cooling depending upon the use and the solar load within each space. It's a highly efficient system, and it's got a good coefficient of performance with adequate comfort and fairly maintainable. A couple other items so you could be aware of is what we call the chilled or low temperature supply air. This is a system where you're delivering air at 48 degrees in lieu of a traditional 55-degree system. And what it enables you to do is downsize your air handling unit, downsize the ductwork, and then increase the efficiency of your chiller plant because you're running it at a lower water temperature. And when you're delivering the 48-degree air, it's delivered to a series fan power terminal unit where the fan runs continuously. And what that does is it takes the 48-degree primary air and mixes it with the 78-degree return air in the plenum and then delivers that air at a 55-degree delivery temperature to the downstream diffusers. Because the series fan power terminal unit runs continuously, it delivers air continuously, and it prevents the dumping that potentially could occur with other systems where you're varying the airflow to the diffusers, and it increases the comfort of the people in the space, in ballrooms and offices and things like that. Radiant panels are chilled water. This is a chilled water panel on your right. They have active and passive. The passive beam is, as you indicated, it sits there and air moves up through and cools down and then drops because of density back into the space to take care of your thermal load, the cooling load, or an active beam, which you deliver ventilation air to the beam, and that's delivered to the space via a small duct into the beam. The great thing about chilled beams are you can deliver the chilled water at about 63 degrees, because you certainly don't want to have any condensation occur in your space. And you can combine those with a dedicated outside air system. This allows you to decouple the ventilation air and deliver what you need to the space in lieu of providing all the airflow to take care of either the solar load or the occupant load. A couple of other items that we recommend: thermal energy storage. This allows you to create a slush, an icy slush, and this is especially helpful and efficient in states where they have high electric demand charges. So you're running the chillers off hours when it's cheaper, creating the slush, and then during the high electric charges, you're actually using that chilled situation from the thermal energy storage to deliver chilled water to your space. It's not as noticeable or used here as frequently in the Northwest because we have very, very low electric rates, but we have seen some ideas where we're sizing it for about 40%, which allows us to reduce the size of our chilled water plant because you have extra capacity stored away. And again, the double duty idea helps a lot if you have a fire water storage tank and you're able to provide half of it with fire water and the other half with chilled slushy mixture. Displacement ventilation is a situation where you're delivering air at about higher than normal 63 degrees. And as you can see with the picture, you're actually delivering it low and slow. So it's about 50 feet per minute. It'll tumble. It'll actually move across the floor. And as soon as it hits a warm body, it will move upwards into the return plenum and back to the air handling unit. The ventilation effectiveness on this system is very, very good because the air moves to the breathing zone once before it's filtered and reconditioned. Also, it's extremely quiet. This is a system that would be perfect for ballrooms, auditoriums, and things of that nature because it is very comfortable, energy efficient, because using the 63-degree air allows you to use outdoor air during economizer mode more often instead of using mechanical refrigeration. You remember the energy baseline load profile. This shows a typical hotel. Now, what I want you to show is the dramatic reduction. So when you incorporate some of these sustainable opportunities that we just discussed, you are including light measures and high-efficiency chillers, you'll notice we dropped from a high of 475 kilowatts down to about 275 kilowatts at 10 p.m. So dramatic increase in efficiency based on whichever sustainable measure that you choose. This is very, very small, so I will blow it up momentarily, but this is an energy efficiency matrix that we utilize here at our office to help our owners pick the appropriate energy efficiency measure. This is probably not that much better, but I'll give it a shot. Up at the top, you'll notice they have what they call, it's a ASHRAE 90.1 baseline building. If you look over to the right, the annual base EUI, 87.7. So there's that 87 number that popped up again as a baseline hotel. But as you look down below, you'll see energy efficiency measure numbers, in this case green. But as you look through, you'll notice that some of them are MEP related, mechanically, electrically, or plumbing related. Some are architectural related. And in this case, this is a Mitsubishi variable refrigerant flow system in the guest rooms. It's got premium efficiency motors, low flow domestic hot water fixtures. And then if you took all of the green items and created a suite of those, you would see that the EUI reduction of this building is it reduces it by 50.6. So it took 87.7 minus 50.6 to an overall EUI on this building of 37.1. So this building is a very efficient building, and this is actually a 5-star LEED Gold hotel in Oregon. So we received basically all the LEED points on this one in the EA credit number one. But primarily, there's also another column that is not shown here. We can actually use the construction cost estimates from contractors and develop a payback, and the owner can pick multiple EEM numbers to identify which payback they would want to pursue, and different EEMs can sway that one way or another. The final grouping is I wanted to talk about the technologies that you are starting to see throughout the different hotels you're staying at. Some of the manufacturers that are involved in this low voltage technologies, Incom, which is now owned by Honeywell, Fountain, Leviton, Schneider Electric, and there's a lot of other smaller ones too that you're probably familiar with. In the case of Fountain below, what they're doing is they're using cloud-based services. You're tying in the hotel point of sales program, so the concierge can go ahead and once you check in, you can tie into the room, connect to the room, you can turn on the HVAC system, you can turn on the lights, you can turn on the music, and take care of everything right from the front desk. And we're starting to see more of that as time goes on. Some of the leading edge technologies that are available and out there, lighting control and motorized shades or drape controls. The big thing about this is you want to keep it simple. For instance, this Modiva on the right and this Designer Series on the left, Modiva is a LED push button, very easy to use. So once you push a button, you know what's going to happen because it says you want to reduce the lighting levels and by a certain amount. You don't have to search and hunt and peck. And the one below on the left is a push button. What could be simpler? And you want to keep it very simple so that everyone of all different ages can utilize the controls. One of the things we have to do in Seattle is any hotel over 50 keys is required to have an occupancy sensor on the thermostat. These are infrared in motion, so when you're sleeping, it still picks up that you're there and keeps the thermostat set point as the temperature that you want. Overseas, there's key card holsters everywhere. They work great. It's as you walk into the room, you put your key card in the holster, it activates the lights, it activates the HVAC, it potentially could activate receptacles too, and as a wonderful aside, it lets you keep your card key in a particular location so you don't lose it. I always have a trouble losing my card key, so this is a great way to save, to have one location. And then I made the comment about the non-critical receptacles. We're seeing these card key controls deactivate receptacles that aren't critical. So the ones that are critical, alarm clock, refrigerator, or maybe one on the desk, stays live, but all the rest shut down. There's no need to have them on when you're not in the room. And some of the flags are looking at smart room iPhone access, key card access. So Holiday Inn is actually doing a test case, and we're working with another prototype hotel where they're designing a new app where you can check into your hotel, not talk to anyone, go up to the room, use your iPhone to activate and get yourself in the room without a car key. Pretty impressive, and I think we're going to start seeing more of that as time goes on. There's also iPads on the table or tabletop controllers. I recently stayed at a hotel in Vegas that had a tabletop controller, and all the controls were through the TV. I didn't have a problem with it, but I had talked to other people that had a very difficult time controlling those laptop controllers, those tabletop controllers. So, again, keep it simple whenever possible, or else people will have a too difficult time using the systems. So at about the 50-minute mark, which I think is a pretty good time, I'd like to provide a quick summary of what we discussed and hopefully what you can take away from this seminar today. We want to create a sustainable backbone for every hotel project we provide design to. We want to support renewable energy when possible, photovoltaic or wind, but if it works in the ROI and there's an appropriate payback, let's support renewable energy. Enhance system control. Can't say it enough that we need to keep it simple, but we also need to ensure that systems are controlled adequately to increase comfort satisfaction. Recover or turn off energy whenever possible. The best way to save energy is not use it. And so if we can open a window and turn off this HVAC system, let's do it. If we don't, rather than throwing heat away, let's reuse it to condition other systems in the building or other systems, like ventilation, air, et cetera. And finally, utilize highly efficient systems if the payback and the return on investment is appropriate for that particular owner-operator. It does wonders for the bottom line. And, of course, the bottom line is the three Ps: people, planet, and profit. And on that note, thank you so much for your attention, and I'll turn it over to Dina.
Scott, thank you so much. That was so interesting, and I learned a ton about mechanical systems. We do have a few questions that have come up during your session. One of them is, are there any efficient alternatives to PTAC that have a reasonable payback period that you've experienced?
Well, yes, that's a very good question, and we're doing a lot of research on that right now. So PTACs, as most of you are well aware, are pretty energy efficient. They're very loud, they're very noisy, and they impact the room layout pretty substantially. We're looking at a new package through the wall heat pump that has been developed, but we've actually installed it in a office in our Portland office, and it hasn't worked very well. It's basically fallen apart. So we're not going to recommend that, but I know there's other firms out there that are doing research into package through the wall heat pumps that are less impactful to the space by reducing the depth of the unit, and also starting to use wireless thermostats instead of mounting them on the system itself, and also adding higher density insulation to reduce the noise, but also giving us the ability to hide these packaged through the wall heat pumps in casework and actually provide duct work that number one, just delivers the air better, number two, cancels out a lot of that compressor noise, and also increases efficiency. With regards to occupancy sensors that help make PTACs more efficient, yes, that is a viable option, and we're starting to see more and more of the manufacturers providing that as a standard protocol, and the interfacing of different product types with that, of occupancy sensors or the key card holsters or things like that, have enabled us to create a more energy efficient system. But with regards to an economic alternate to the PTAC, it's really, really difficult to find that right now, but I think it will get better as more and more of the major manufacturers start to make that investment into the 2- and 3-star arena.
Excellent. Another question, do you have a preference as a mechanical engineer when you're designing these systems, since the different types of buildings have such different types of systems? Do you enjoy doing the kind of boutique hotels more than a chain hotel?
You know, I actually do like the boutique hotels because they're quite challenging and their design standards are typically not as regimented as some of the other major flags, so it allows us a little bit more flexibility in what we recommend. Also, the boutique hotels, because they tend to be longer-term holders of their property, they're looking for truly a guest experience, and they're usually kind of the home-away-from-home sort of scenario. So they have a little bit different payback and ROI, and a lot of them will give us a little bit more leeway in the system types. As long as we give them a good layout of pros and cons for the system types, they tend to look for energy sustainable measures, but also they don't want to impact the guest comfort situation.
That makes sense. How do you deal with operable windows in a humid climate in a hotel? Is there a way to run, if a sliding glass door or a window is open, is there a way to just dehumidify the room?
That is a very big challenge. We're so very fortunate here in Seattle to not have the humid environments that you do elsewhere. And so we can take use of operable windows in a much more broad spectrum. In the case of very humid climates, that is always a challenge. What we're doing in Guam right now, we're working on a design, and as most of you are well aware, Guam is 87 degrees and 87% relative humidity every day of the year. What we're doing with that one is they're actually not providing operable windows in that space, but as a way to save energy, we're actually using iris dampers to turn off the exhaust when the room's not occupied, and then what we'll do is have it turn off. We'll actually end also the fan coil unit. But what we'll do is we'll have those fan coil units and exhaust air cycle on a periodic basis to ensure that the humidity levels in the room stay consistent. So in the case of an operable window in a humid climate, it would certainly have to be tied in to the fan coil unit to shut it down or else it wouldn't keep up. But also, once it's closed, that fan coil unit would have a tremendous – it would be difficult for it to catch back up. So there needs to be a certain control on the BMS, on the building management system, to ensure that those rooms, should that window be left open, isn't affected, because of course mold and uncomfortable situations are something that the hotel just can't deal with.
That makes sense. Okay, one last question. Do you have a solution? You mentioned earlier that it's not a good idea to put in the ultra-low flow urinals into a renovation. Uh-huh. Is there a solution for that if you have a renovation?
The solution for the urinal would be to replace the urinal with a 1/8 gallons per flush. Some of us on the call may have been involved with a replacement of a urinal to a waterless urinal, and that has been interesting because what ends up happening is the fact that there's not enough water flow through the pipes, they tend to clog up over time, and the chemicals have been somewhat expensive, and also it's been a situation of cleanliness in the bowl. So what I've talked to several hotels is when they're doing a major renovation of the plumbing fixtures, if they have urinals or water closets, what they'll do is they will pick the certain items and do an upgrade of them. And it's a situation like for a urinal, if you replace the flush valve, you need to just pay attention to the cleanliness of the bowl. Or if you put in one that uses less water, your maintenance staff is going to have a different sort of process by which to ensure those things remain clean.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I have actually experienced that myself on a project. Excellent.
Okay.
So thank you, Scott, very much for doing such a very thorough job of explaining all of these different types of systems and technologies related to all levels of sustainability, from site to energy to water. This was really, really interesting, and we very much appreciate it. Hopefully everybody notices on the screen, if you are looking for CEU credits, the instructions are there on the screen. You will also receive a follow-up email from Nicole Crawford at newh.org with additional information as well. And please look out for other additional Green Voice educational opportunities. We have one coming up in the spring, date to be determined, so pay attention to the newh.org website for new information on that. And with that, I think we will end. Thank you again, Scott, and please join us again.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Enjoy the day.
Stand by.